Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 30th day of January 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. It's a Thursday. Right? Yeah. No, it's a Thursday. Welcome to the program. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. You can tweet me at Derek A. Hunter. You can, if you find me on Facebook, you can only follow me. I think that I've reached the maximum number of friends. I don't say that to sound douchey. It's just, for a long time I went through and accepted everybody, and now I can't accept anybody. So it just won't let me do that. Oh, man, what a day. What a day. It just wrapped up. It literally just wrapped up. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord. Today in impeachment is in the books. And what a joke it was. I apologize. I was wrong. I was on a roll as far as making predictions that turned out to be pretty accurate. Pretty damn accurate. And I crapped the bed yesterday on the show when I said that this was going to be the interesting one. This was going to be the one that could be, well, I guess I used the qualifier could, but I'm not going to give myself an easy out. I thought it would be much more interesting than it was, and it just wasn't. It was as scripted as everything else. You get these questions. Do you agree with blah, 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 blah? And they go up there, well, yes, I agree with blah, 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 blah. The Democrats actually were more coordinated than I thought they would be, and they were worse at hiding it than I thought they would be. They went up there with scripts to supposed questions that were just being asked by senators, you know, in kind of a spitballing session. They went up there with three ring binders with scripts in them and read their answers to these questions from Democrats, which tells you that they worked on these things together. And they'd probably been working together on these things since the beginning of probably in that 30-day delay, or however many days it was, in the delay in the articles of impeachment being sent over to the House. We're going to ask this. We're going to do that. Now, how can I say that? How can you be so cynical, Derek? They had visual aids specific to the questions asked at the ready. That doesn't happen. There are a lot of people out there who are pretty good with PowerPoint. Nobody's that good with PowerPoint. Quickly, the question is being read. We have 12 seconds before we start answering it, and I call for a slide. Go. No, I ain't buying it. This whole thing is an even bigger sham than I thought it was. I was shocked. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into Elizabeth Warren going off the deep end, going literally off the deep end. She pledges she wants to criminalize spreading false information online. Hello, Adolf. She pledges she won't do it anymore. Starting now. It's shocking. Yeah, does that mean she can never say anything online about her phony DNA test and her bogus heritage again? I don't know. So, like I said, we've got a lot of stuff to get to. I'm torn between, do I play a lot of audio or do I not play a lot of audio? Because literally there was nothing of value from today. It was as scripted as anything else. It might as well have been a reenactment. So we'll get into all of that. But first, a word from our fine sponsor, ancientlifeoil.com, and the finest CBD oil you can get your hands on. And I just pulled out the drawer. I got my hands on mine. I got the chocolate mint CBD oil, 100% organic. It's great for what ails you, little aches and pains, little joint discomfort, little joint pain, my eye strain at the end of the day. That's what I use it for mostly, but it also helps me relax and sleep better because I don't get a whole lot of sleep, but I don't require a whole lot of sleep. What I really need to be able to do is get to sleep faster, and this helps with that because I was normally a tosser and turner. CBD oil, it does not have THC. It's not going to get you high. It just helps you internally. And if you don't feel comfortable putting it internally, they have topical creams too. So you can rub it on your knees, on your hips, on your shoulders, wherever it bugs you, and you're going to get relief. You're going to be shocked. And you're going to go, what? Where has this been my whole life? Go to ancientlifeoil.com, pick out your flavor if you want the oil or get the topical cream. Enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. You get special discounts. I think it's free shipping, which ain't nothing to sniff at, and they ship pretty fast. So check that out. It supports the show, supports the sponsor, and it supports you. You're going to be a believer. So I appreciate all of that and all that you do for this program. Okay, let's just get into this thing. My God. I'm literally standing up in my office, rubbing my head, going, what just happened? It was supposed to be an opportunity. Maybe there are just literally no senators who have a mind of their own, who have any original thoughts or curiosity about anything that they heard, but the lack of seriousness in these questions. There were literally questions sent up to the Democratic team going, do you agree that Donald Trump is this? Do you agree that Republicans should be doing this? Like, of course that you're spewing Democratic talking points. What in the hell do you think they're going to say? Well, no, I totally disagree with my party. And I disagree with everything I've been arguing over the past 2 weeks. I'm totally against it all. Yeah, shockingly, nobody stood up and made the massive confession that, yeah, I disagree with everything we've been doing. It was a complete and total joke. And Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, it's kind of funny. They have to, I hope you didn't watch much of it. I hope you didn't watch any of it. But if you saw any of it, you saw the show and how Senate procedure dictates everything. And what happened is a senator stands up. I thought they were going to be anonymous. They weren't anonymous. But a senator stands up and Mr. Chief Justice, Chief Justice Roberts goes, the senator from wherever the hell they're from. And he says, I have a question for the president's defense. It's submitting to the desk. And a little Senate page runs up there with a piece of paper. It's all typed out, which tells you everything, too, that these things have been planned for a while. And the Chief Justice goes, on behalf of Senator such and such, and sometimes they did like the 6 or 7 of them are asking the question at the same time, so their constituents could hear their names called. It was so bad. So the senator from such and such has a question on behalf of all these other people. And then Roberts has to read the question. These questions were repetitive. I don't know, maybe after listening to, 24, 36 hours of the Democrats repeating themselves, that everybody's brain is stuck on rewind or replay or a permanent loop or whatever, but I don't know what the hell happened. They're all asking the same questions, and Roberts has to read them. And you just know that going through his head is, you people are United States senators. What in the hell kind of question is this? One of them was like, this is a question for the House managers. Can you explain how the foreign aid payments are supposed to work? Like, you don't know the answer to that question, but you're going to go to somebody in the House to ask that question, get the answer to this question? You don't know your job? Well, resign. Just resign. Get out. You should be embarrassed. You should hang your head in shame at some of these questions. But they won't. Most of the senators are safe. The unsafe senators played it safe. So the safe senators were nuts and asking stupid questions. And the unsafe senators were asking very safe questions that didn't tip any hat which way they might be going. Oh, I have genuine concerns and questions about this. And then half the time, The House managers, at least, didn't bother answering the questions, particularly the questions from Republicans that they found inconvenient and they didn't want to answer. They all spent a lot of time, the Democrats did, attacking Alan Dershowitz. And curiously, so did the media. We're going to have a clip of Alan Dershowitz making a perfectly valid and quite excellent point that the left completely bastardized. It took up a lot of the discussion on cable news. Dershowitz says president can do anything he wants as long as he thinks it's in the national interest. That's not what he said. They're so... I don't think they're really that obtuse. Some of them are, you know, the CNN anchors, absolutely. But the normal human beings out there with IQs larger than their shoe size aren't that obtuse. So actually, let's just get into that because I can't spend a lot of time on this tonight. I watched that thing and I just feel like I've been robbed. I've been robbed of a night. It's ridiculous. Alan Dershowitz is talking in this clip about the abuses of the House of Representatives and the idea that abuse of power is not an impeachable offense, because it's not. It's a tactic. It's not a crime. You can't really define what it is. It can mean whatever. You've abused your power. How did I do that? Well, you just did. I feel as though you did. And maybe in liberal college campus world, this is a horrible affront that from which there is no turning back and no redemption or whatever. But in reality, and in particularly, and more importantly, in the law and in the Constitution, it means absolutely nothing. So Alan Dershowitz is up there and he gets around in this clip. It's a preamble. It's like a 2.5 minute clip. So I want to give it the whole context and the buildup because this really set the left off. Dershowitz is talking about the idea that a president can be impeached and removed from office because they've abused their power and how stupid that standard is. Because a president, you know, if they've abused their power for their own personal political gain, that's what the Democrats are saying that Donald Trump did with Ukraine. Dershowitz is saying, well, what about a situation? There are situations where a president can, I mean, every president basically does their foreign policy, and just about everything that they do, they assume, or from their perspective, is in the nation's best interest. But also, it's in their own political interest. There aren't very many politicians, forget presidents, who go, I support this piece of legislation, even though it's going to completely screw me over. I'll never get reelected again. I'll be run out of town on rails. It's all over for me. But damn it, this bill is so important. That doesn't happen. They look at the legislation and they say, is it good for the country? Is it a good thing? And how can I use this into my advantage in my reelection? Now, according to the Democrats' standard, that is advancing a policy or piece of legislation or whatever based upon your personal political gain, which is a no-no. It's a horrible thing. It's an abuse of power. But if it is in the course of doing their duty, then it suddenly has a dual-track meaning. Theoretically, the person supporting it or the president signing it or the congressman voting for it believes it's for the betterment of the country, right? But they also believe that it will help them politically. Can you impeach somebody because of the second part of that? Because they think it will help them politically. Because here's a little secret. A lot of what Congress votes on and a lot of what presidents sign into law, and I'm not talking about the big ones where they have the huge ceremonies, but the everyday things that nobody pays attention to or don't get that much press, especially now because everything's about impeachment, they are disinterested in. The people who vote on it, the people who sign it, they just don't care. The federal government is so gigantic and does so much, it's impossible. You'd be a basket case if you sat around caring deeply and getting torn up and ripping your hair out about every single thing that our government does on a daily basis. So they don't care. So you know what, renaming this or sending some money to that thing or whatever. Here's $100 million. Just go away. No politician really cares about that unless the money's going to their district, yet a lot of them vote for it. So if they don't care, but they think they can benefit from it politically, say by horse trading votes. I'm Senator so-and-so from Maryland. The Senator so-and-so from South Dakota wants me to support $100 million to move a mountain or whatever. And I don't care. I don't want to write for that. But I tell you what, Senator so-and-so from South Dakota, I'll support your $100 million to move your mountain if you support my $100 million to repave I-95, right? That's the horse trading that goes on, especially in these gigantic omnibus bills where they offer amendment after amendment after amendment. I'll support yours if you support mine. It's I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. Now, I would be voting for the $100 million for South Dakota for something I have no concern, no care, no interest in whatsoever. I couldn't care less. The mountain stays there. The mountain goes. Doesn't matter to me. But it will benefit me politically because I am guaranteed by voting for that $100 million, $100 million for my state that will benefit me politically. You see where that goes, how that happens? If you want to take this to the absurdity, that's why the idea of abuse of power, I would have abused my power. Say the senator from South Dakota is one vote shy of getting their $100 million to move that mountain, and that's very important to them as a South Dakotan and for their reelection prospects. Well, I don't care. That gives me actually more leverage. So I could say, I'll vote for your $100 million if you vote for $200 million for me. You need my vote. More of the senators drive on I-95 because it goes right around Washington, D.C., then we'll go see this mountain before or after you move it or whatever the hell you're going to do with it. So give me more. Now I've got leverage. Now I'm exerting that leverage. Some would say I'm abusing that power if they're sitting there at 49 votes or 50 votes or whatever, and I can be the deciding vote. Should I be impeached? Should I be removed from office? Should I be expelled from the United States Senate for doing that? If you want to argue that, I might be right there with it. I'd really enjoy voting against that, to be perfectly honest with you. But to throw somebody out of office, that's how things are done. That's how the real world works. Nothing is purely political. Nothing is purely in the good of the country. If it's in the good, if it's for the good of the country, then it is a political benefit to the person doing it, by very definition, theoretically, you would think, right? So if the, well, I'm over explaining this, as I always do, when we can have Alan Dershowitz do it for us. So let's go right to the tape. Here's Alan Dershowitz talking on the floor of the Senate, answering a question last night about the absurdity of abuse of power.
Yesterday, I had the privilege of attending the rolling out of a peace plan by the President of the United States regarding the Israel-Palestine conflict. And I offered you a hypothetical the other day. What if a Democratic president were to be elected and Congress were to authorize much money to either Israel or the Palestinians, and the Democratic president were to say to Israel, no, I'm going to withhold this money unless you stop all settlement growth, or to the Palestinians, I will withhold the money Congress authorized to you unless you stop paying terrorists. And the president said, quid pro quo. If you don't do it, you don't get the money. If you do it, you get the money. There's no one in this chamber that would regard that as in any way unlawful. The only thing that would make a quid pro quo unlawful is if the quo were in some way illegal. Now, we talked about motive. There are three possible motives that a political figure can have. One, a motive in the public interest. And the Israel argument would be, in the public interest. The second is in his own political interest. And the third, which hasn't been mentioned, would be in his own financial interest, his own pure financial interest, just putting money in the bank. I want to focus on the second one for just one moment. Every public official that I know believes that his election is in the public interest. And mostly you're right. Your election is in the public interest. And if a president does something which he believes will help him get elected in the public interest, that cannot be the kind of quid pro quo that results in impeachment.
The end part there is what has the left going absolutely berserk. They're twisting it. President saying if he does something that is in the public interest that will help him get elected. It'll help him get elected that's in the public interest. Not that the president thinks that them getting elected is in the public interest, but if the president does something that they think will help get them elected that is also in the public interest. That is not a quid pro quo. That is I'm yelling. God, I'm really worked up today. But that is everything I just described. That is everything every politician does, except for the people who just float through life and are happy to be there. That's what the Democrats are trying to argue. No, it doesn't matter. If it was to benefit them in their election, in Donald Trump's election, in any way, shape, or form, whether or not it was also in the public interest, impeach. And Dershowitz is saying, no, it can be both. And most things are both. Do you think Barack Obama didn't sit around and think about how his decisions when it came to issues of foreign or domestic policy would impact his approval ratings or his reelection campaign or how it would impact Democrats going forward? You're wrong. You're insane. He was every bit a political animal as anybody else. He was not this saint who walked on water. But should he have been impeached for it? No, Democrats would never go for that. You can't impeach God. You can't impeach God. It's different when they do it because they think, well, we're only doing it because it's in the public interest and it might passively benefit us electorally. But no real politician gives such weight to such things. Bullshit. Everything they do. I know these people on both sides of the aisle. Everything they poll test which side of the bed they should get up in the morning, which side of their head they should part their hair. Yet everybody in the media, in the left-wing media, was going, oh my God, Alan Dershowitz says you basically, the president can do whatever they want. They're making an argument for being able to shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue like Donald Trump said he could. And he could do that as long as he said it was in the national interest, and then he gets away with it. That's the way it should work, right? It's absurd. Maggie Haberman, New York Times reporter, she tweeted, anything the president does to keep his office is in the national interest, Dershowitz testifies. That's not at all what you just heard. That's not remotely close to what you just heard. But Maggie Haberman, serious award-winning journalist, said it. She wrote a story about it. She works at the New York Times. It must be true. They wouldn't lie, would they? Is that what you heard Alan Dershowitz say? Go ahead, Mr. President. Just walk around the streets of Washington, D.C. and shoot people and say that it's in the national interest. You'll be just like that guy in the Lethal Weapon movie. You just got to say diplomatic immunity, except you don't have to say that. You just have to say in the national interest, and then you can walk on and shoot the next person. That's not at all what Dershowitz was saying. They're talking about the politicization of everything and how meaningless the term abuse of power is and how far it could be taken by future Congresses because this one had no self-control, no restraint, and no decency or reverence for this country. That part, most of the Q&A session put me to sleep. But I did notice, but that part just got me pissed off. And I thought Dershowitz couldn't have been more clear. I don't know what you need. Maybe, you know, you need some Q-tips. Maybe we should mail Q-tips to Congress so they can clean the crap out of their ears because they've had their head so far up their asses throughout this whole thing that they need something. Maybe some corn is stuck in there. Who the hell knows? But it is absurd. If you have a good case, you don't have to lie about it. The Democrats were down there on the floor of the Senate yesterday arguing that Mick Mulvaney, the acting chief of staff, admitted there that the president did this. And he said, get over it. I played that for you last week when they were making this argument. It is a bald-faced lie. That's what Mick Mulvaney said, the words get over it. He had absolutely no reference to the way Democrats are using it. But if you just take a sentence from somebody, you don't give it the proper context, you don't show anybody any more than just that one sentence, why, you could nail anybody's ass to the wall. I guarantee you've said something that if I just took one sentence, one part of it, I could ruin your marriage. I could ruin your life. I could get you fired from a job, whatever it is. If somebody with nefarious intent wanted to do that, they could do it. That's a tactic the Democrats are using here. That lets you know how weak their case is. If you have to do that, if you have to lie so much, if your ironclad evidence is a snippet here and a snippet there, just like, well, the president says that that Article 2 of the Constitution says he could do whatever he wants. So he doesn't care what goes on. He thinks that being president of the United States, the Constitution allows him to thwart any law, guard the will of Congress, which is kind of rich coming from the party of Barack Obama with his magic pen and phone, who actually did circumvent Congress, to the cheers of Democrats, by the way, who urged him to do it and then cheered him when he did it. But no, Donald Trump thinks Article 2 can make him act like he's Barack Obama. Except that's not what he said when he was talking about Article 2 of the Constitution. He was talking about his ability to fire Robert Mueller had he wanted to, which he did not do. Robert Mueller, to say this to the people who are new, Robert Mueller was not a civil servant and he was not a congressional appointee. He was an employee of the Justice Department. Therefore, a political appointee of the Justice Department, therefore, served at the pleasure of the president, which means that the president could have fired him for any reason. Donald Trump could have gotten up one day and said, screw Robert Mueller, I want him fired, and that would have been absolutely perfectly legal. It would have been stupid politically, but it would have been legal. That is what Donald Trump was talking about when he said, I have Article 2. It can do whatever I want. Means I can do whatever I want. Don't take my word for it. The Democrats played the clip over and over again last week of Donald Trump saying, Article 2 says I can do whatever I want. Just about that. That was all they played. Here's the whole thing in context, just to let you know how big of a pile of steaming hot fraud these people are.
Or he believed it because I would constantly tell anybody that would listen, including you, including the media, that Robert Mueller was conflicted. Robert Mueller had a total conflict of interest. I didn't say that. Look, Article 2, I would be allowed to fire Robert Mueller. There was not, assuming I did all of the things I said, I want to fire him. Number one, I didn't. He wasn't fired. Okay, number one, very importantly. But more importantly, Article 2 allows me to do whatever I want. Article 2 would have allowed me to fire him.
It's weird how that quote sounds in context, isn't it? Because it's very focused. It's not schizophrenic. It's not some rube moron who doesn't know anything about anything talking. Suddenly, it is an intelligent man explaining the Constitution to a little freaking Muppet named George Stephanopoulos, arguing the other direction. Trying to convince the president, you tried to fire Robert Mueller. The president doesn't try to fire people. The president can fire people. The president likes firing people, apparently. But no. George was arguing that you tried to fire Robert Mueller. Well, if Robert Mueller was fired, why wasn't he fired? If I tried to fire him, how do you try to fire somebody and fail? You're fired. No. It's not like that episode of Seinfeld where George kept trying to break up with that woman and she refused to accept the breakup. It's not like you go into your boss's office tomorrow and tell him to go F himself. And he goes, you know what? I don't appreciate that. You're fired. And you go, nope, I'm not. I'm not going anywhere. You can't fire me. Yeah, they can. And yes, the president could have fired Robert Mueller any damn time he wanted to for any reason whatsoever, legally. Politically, it would have been incredibly stupid, but legally, it was 100% legal. That is the context that the Democrats took that Article 2 says I can do whatever I want and made the argument Donald Trump is right there bragging about how he can do whatever the hell he wants on anything he wants. And so he tried to screw over Ukraine on behalf of Vladimir Putin, his puppet master. This is the level of sophistication of the argument that they've made. That lets you know how weak-ass their case is that they have to argue like this. What happened to that ironclad case with all the evidence rolling out of your pockets and out of your ears and out of your ass? Suddenly, when you look at it, and especially when you give it context, it blows up in their faces. They don't have it anymore. It doesn't hold up to scrutiny. But you're just sitting there, and it's insane what these people do and who these people think they're fooling. I mean, maybe they're not fooling the media. The media is on board. The media, they don't need to be fooled. Maybe there's a constituency out there for this. You know, there are people with their Trump derangement syndrome being absolutely through the roof that they don't care. And they just go, hey, you know what? I'm cool with this because they don't really care about anything except getting rid of Donald Trump. A shining example of this is Lawrence Tribe. He is a professor of law up at Harvard. He is also a big, big, big time lib. He's probably pissed off he was never appointed to the Supreme Court because he knew he would never get Senate confirmation. But he was out there arguing. He tweeted out, quote, Alan Dershowitz just argued that a president who believes only he can fix it, who thinks his reelection is vital to the nation, can't be impeached for abusing his power to corrupt the next election in his favor because, by definition, he's doing what he thinks best for the country. And he used two exclamation points. Now, one would think that a Harvard law professor would understand what another Harvard law professor was saying, but no, he doesn't. Then he goes on to say, accepting this argument would put us on a short path towards dictatorship, benevolent or otherwise. It's incompatible with government of, by, and for the people. It's government by egomania. These people are so full of shit, I'm surprised their hair isn't brown. This is the best and the brightest that the left has to offer. Alan Dershowitz called out Lawrence Tribe on the floor of the Senate tonight. It was kind of funny because he was talking about how Lawrence Tribe, when Bill Clinton was being impeached, said that a sitting president cannot be charged with any crime whatsoever. Now that it's Donald Trump, well, suddenly the president can be charged with all kinds of crimes because it's Donald Trump and I don't like Donald Trump. It was kind of a funny moment.
By the way, the congressman was just completely wrong when he said, I'm the only scholar who supports this position. In the 19th century, which is much closer in time to when the framers wrote, Dean Dwight of the Columbia Law School wrote that the weight of authority, by which he meant the weight of scholarly authority and the weight of judicial authority, this is 1867, the weight of authority is in favor of requiring a crime. Justice Curtis came to the same conclusion. Others have come to a similar conclusion. You asked what happened between 1998 and the current to change my mind? What happened between the 19th century and the 20th century to change the mind of so many scholars? Let me tell you what happened. What happened is that the current president was impeached. If in fact President Obama or President Hillary Clinton had been impeached, the weight of current scholarship would be clearly in favor of my position, because these scholars do not pass the shoe on the other foot test. These scholars are influenced by their own bias, by their own politics, and their views should be taken with that in mind. They simply do not give objective assessments of the constitutional history. Professor Tribe suddenly had a revelation himself. At the time when Clinton was impeached, he said, oh, the law is clear. You cannot charge a president with a crime while he's the sitting president. Now we have a current president. Professor Tribe got woke. And with no apparent new research, he came to the conclusion, oh, but this president can be charged while sitting in office. That's not the kind of scholarship that should influence your decision.
Lawrence Tribe, superhero to the left. He's always cited by the left as, oh, legal scholar Lawrence Tribe. Legal scholar Lawrence Tribe. Alan Dershowitz used to be cited by the left, too. Then he made arguments inconvenient to them because he's being intellectually honest. Lawrence Tribe is not being intellectually honest, so the left still quotes him like drooling fangirls meeting the Beatles in 1964. That I thought was a funny moment and a telling moment, and that tells you why Lawrence Tribe is out there going, oh, I can't believe Alan Dershowitz made this argument. Alan Dershowitz didn't make that argument. But you can't address the argument that Alan Dershowitz was actually making, so you have to take what he said and twist it out of context, ignoring what he really said in order to make your case, which is a big indicator for the fact that you don't have a freaking case. It's unbelievable what passes for intellect on cable news. It passes for serious thought, and that should be listened to and should be broadcast to millions, or in CNN's case, thousands of people. Asha Rapabanga, Gambappa, I don't know how the hell you pronounce her last name. I don't care. She's a former Obama administration official because of course she is. That's the criteria for working at CNN, that or being a made-for-TV conservative who's willing to go up there and say, yes, I'm a Republican, but tisk, 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 what Republicans are doing is really letting me down. Those two things will get you cable news contracts. A former Obama administration official and Matt Lewis, who might as well be a former Obama administration official. Must hurt to sit down when you tuck it that far back. Asha tweeted out, she's a legal analyst over at CNN now, so they gave her the stamp of, you know, she's a legal analyst. She's not just a contributor. She's there because of her legal acumen and her brilliance. She says, important, the argument Dersh is making that if the president thinks a candidate might be a national security threat, he can investigate it, meaning because they're talking about the Bidens. And then she goes all caps lock, so you know she's serious. She says, is exactly what was the basis for Crossfire Hurricane. If Republicans accept Dersh's logic, they better call Barr to stop Durham's review. See, they're terrified. They're absolutely terrified about what might come up in the Durham investigation. But it's kind of funny because the Obama administration abused the FISA courts. They abused the FISA application process. They trampled on the rights of American citizens, which as a lawyer you're supposed to care about. But as a CNN contributor, there's no money in it. So you just ignore that part. You just overlook, you gloss over that part. That's no big deal. The trampling of rights of American citizens. Yeah, I was an American citizen, but it was a Republican American citizen. So that doesn't really count. You can suspend the Constitution if you think a Republican will be the target of it. Then go right ahead. But everybody else, knock yourself out. These people are flaming hypocrites and frauds. They don't give a damn about the Constitution. They wipe themselves with the Second Amendment while wrapping themselves in the First. It is absolute, total fraud. And to sit there and spread it on cable news unchallenged is, I can't say shocking. It's not shocking. It's disgusting, but it is not shocking, not in the least. I could go off on this all night, this whole thing, and I would just, it would devolve into an endless stream of F-bombs. So I'm going to stop talking about this stuff. But it just drives me nuts. If you can't make your case without taking something out of context, if you can't make your case without lying about it, you don't have a case. And that Democrats are sitting there going, well, I think the House managers are doing a wonderful job. Chuck Schumer runs out to the microphones every chance he gets. And it's a powerful argument from Manager Schiff. What argument? The part where he took half a sentence, took it out of context, made it about something it wasn't, and then lied about it after that? That part was powerful to you, Chuck? I get that you hate Donald Trump. I get it. But we see this. Do you not have any dignity? Do you not have any decency whatsoever? Any at all? No. The answer is no. It's a hypothetical question. It's ridiculous. God, I'm just gonna start swearing. I need to get off this topic. Let's talk about something else. It wasn't just me, by the way, who noticed that the Democrats were scripted. The Washington bureau chief for the UK Daily Mail, he tweeted out, "It's rather strange that House managers have on-point answers ready for every question a Democratic senator asks. Either these members of Congress are extraordinarily well prepared, or there's some collusion going on." I thought, of course, that the senators were supposed to be open-minded and not have made their mind up at all. And they were, everybody in the media and every Democrat down there on the floor of the Senate is blasting Republicans, saying they're not coming to this as impartial jurors. Meanwhile, the Democrats are working with the impeachment managers for this act of the play. And nobody says anything. Hey, it's no big deal. Whatever. What are you going to do? And another note of controversy that had pearls clutched all across the media landscape. I think every day you have to wear pearls in a newsroom today just because the president might do something that would call, if you go clutching for your pearls and you have no pearls on, my God, it's worse than wearing white after Labor Day. Jake Tapper summed it up perfectly. He tweeted out, "A Trump campaign official just retweeted a tweet containing the name of the alleged whistleblower." Notice he doesn't say the name. He doesn't dare say the name. Now, Jake Tapper is the guy who reported on the dossier. He had no unverified, salacious garbage that has proven to be false time after time. But he had no problem breaking that story. Once BuzzFeed ran with it, he got pissed off that BuzzFeed ran with it because he was only reporting about it. BuzzFeed showed it to the world, and we all saw it and said, this? Some idiot believed this? Did they suffer a closed head injury? What in the hell is wrong with anybody who would believe this? So Jake Tapper was pissed off at BuzzFeed for publishing it because Jake was giving it weight in his reporting. And if we were able to see that, we can't verify everything in this dossier, but I can tell you some of the things that were in it because the president was briefed on it by James Comey in a private one-on-one meeting that I just happened to find out about. But don't worry, there was nobody plotting and scheming. Nobody tipped me off, and James Comey would never, ever leak to me. No, James Comey didn't leak to you. He called James Clapper, who then leaked to you. So there's an intermediary so that Comey could have plausible deniability, because this is how the deep state works. They keep it just far enough outside the reach of fingertips that you don't get any fingerprints on it. So they're all very upset that somebody associated with the Trump campaign. Now, if you had some information right now that was incredibly damaging to the United States national security, seriously, 100% USDA prime damaging to U.S. national security, and it would also make Donald Trump look bad, CNN wouldn't think twice about reporting it. They would run it up the flagpole and then try to verify it maybe afterwards. It would just be too good to fact check. They outed, remember when the media outed, the same media that is very upset that somebody associated with the Trump campaign tweeted out the name Eric Chermont, blah, 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 blah. They outed the CIA bureau chief in Tehran. They made him have to flee the country. Why? Because they could make Donald Trump look bad. That if it hurts Donald Trump, they're all in. It doesn't matter. National security, they don't give a shit about that. They don't care about anything except beating Donald Trump. That's who they are. That's what they do. It's the reason for their first breath in the morning. It's the reason for their last breath at night. That's all they care about. It's disgusting. All right, I said I wasn't going to talk about it anymore, and I just did 5 more minutes on it. I am moving on because, well, it's sort of. Talk about the John Bolton situation. It is his book, still allegedly coming out on March 17th. Nobody's read it, not even the reporters who've reported on it, which used to not be kosher when it came to reporting. You kind of had to know that what you were reporting was true. If you're saying something's in a book, you had to see it for yourself, not, well, somebody who was familiar with the contents of the book told me it was in there, which makes me think that, you know, it's all just a huge coincidence, right? The story goes to the New York Times, leaked to the New York Times in air quotes, the same day that the Amazon page goes live, just a total, total coincidence. And then we find out, well, this has been submitted to the White House for approval. They've known about it since the end of December. December 30th, to be exact, was when the manuscript was submitted to the White House, and we haven't heard anything back. Well, guess what? A, bureaucracies work at their own pace. They're not on your schedule. Try to get a bureaucracy to do something, and it's not going to happen. Just imagine how efficient they'll be when they're managing our healthcare. But the bureaucracy did actually, we come to find out yesterday, write back to Bolton, and they told him in no uncertain terms that there are things that are possibly detrimental to national security, shall we say, up to and including, according to the lawyers, things that are classified top secret. They said that they, in their letter, it's a very short letter, that they will happily work with Mr. Bolton to remove those parts of his manuscript so that his book can then go out and be published. That wasn't reported. It was reported as Donald Trump tries to block the publication. He threatens the publication of John Bolton's new book. He's threatening John Bolton. That was the theme. That was the word that they used completely throughout the reporting today. It was a threat from the White House. There's no threat in the letter. There's no threat remotely close to the letter. The idea that there was a threat is absurd and obscene, which is why it was reported ad nauseum by the mainstream media. It made Trump look bad. It made it look like, well, why is Donald Trump trying to block this manuscript from being published? It's because he's trying to threaten John Bolton. He's threatening to cancel the publication of his book. Here is the entirety of the letter that John Bolton's publisher got, or John Bolton got, or his agent, or whoever the hell they are. Quote, "Thank you for speaking yesterday by telephone as we discussed the National Security Asset Management Access Management Directorate has been provided the manuscript submitted by your client, the former assistant to the President for National Security Affairs, John Bolton, for publication review. Based on our preliminary review, the manuscript appears to contain significant amounts of classified information. It also appears that some of this classified information is at the top secret level, which is defined as by Executive Order 13526 as information that, quote, reasonably could be expected to cause exceptionally grave harm to the national security of the United States if disclosed without authorization. Under federal law and the non-disclosure agreement your client signed as a condition for gaining access to classified information, the manuscript may not be published or otherwise disclosed without the deletion of this classified information. The manuscript remains under review in order for us to do our best to assist your client in identifying the classified information within the manuscript while at the same time ensuring that publication does not harm the national security security of the United States. We will do our best to work with you to ensure your client's ability to tell his story in a manner that protects U.S. national security. We will be in touch with you shortly with additional, more detailed guidance regarding next steps that should enable you to revise the manuscript and move forward as expeditiously as possible. End of letter, except for the signature, which is sincerely, not menacingly. Did anything in that sound like a threat to you? Yet it was couched as a threat. It was called a threat. It was, you know, oh my God, what is the White House trying to do? What was lost in all of the left-wing media going, they're threatening John Bolton, they're trying to threaten the publication of his book, blah, 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 was the date of this letter. The date is January 23rd, 2020. Now, that's just another day to you and me, but it's also conveniently, just coincidental. There are a lot of coincidences in this impeachment trial. But conveniently, the 23rd is last Thursday, just 3 days before the New York Times miraculously got their hands on some of the information, not the manuscript itself, but the information in it, the bombshell information, to put more pressure on the Trump White House, presumably, to try to get them to release the Kraken, to release the information, to let them publish their book. Are they trying to circumvent what the government has decided as properly labeled as being top secret? Does John Bolton dispute that? Or are they just trying to get more publicity? It's all, again, just an amazing series of coincidences. Who could have ever thought any? John Bolton should play the lottery. All these Democrats should go and play the lottery because they are just the lucky beneficiaries of weird and strange coincidences that just keep happening to them. It's so bizarre. So bizarre. But it sure as hell isn't a threat. Now, John Bolton's attorney later on released another email exchange with the woman who'd signed the letter sincerely. They're trying to push up this publication, but this email exchange went on January 24th. So that means that the lawyers or rep agent, whatever, for John Bolton, the next day were demanding answers and trying to push this along. Their lawyer, Charles Cooper, writes, following up on the voicemail I left you early today, thank you for the letter of yesterday afternoon, pledging again to perform your pre-publication review of Ambassador Bolton's book manuscript as expeditiously as possible. As you are no doubt aware, the House managers in the Senate impeachment trial have made clear their intention to seek Ambassador Bolton's testimony at trial, and although no one yet knows whether the Senate will subpoena him to testify, he is preparing for that possibility. If he's called to testify, it seems certain that he will be asked questions that will elicit much of the information contained in the chapter of his manuscript dealing with his involvement in matters relating to Ukraine. We do not believe that any of the information could reasonably be considered classified, but given Ambassador Bolton's role could be called to testify as early as next week, it is imperative that we have the results of your review of that chapter as soon as possible. Please do give me a call to let me know how we can work together toward that end. Again, bureaucracies work at their own pace. But it is rather curious that 2 days after that, and it takes a little time to put together a New York Times story to go through the editing process and minimal fact-checking, 2 days after that email, the day after receiving their letter after the initial review of the book, suddenly these exact relevant parts of this book end up being referenced, not quoted, in the pages of the New York Times. Yet everybody involved in Bolton World says we had nothing to do with it. We would never even consider doing such a thing for the sake of publicity for a book we're desperate to sell as many copies as humanly possible of. Anybody buying that? Anybody buying that at all? I don't think so. I sure as hell ain't. Anyway, that's enough of this. We'll talk about something else for the few minutes we have left. If this show's too ranty today, I'm sorry. And if there's no Quinn in the background, that's because Quinn and Bailey and the wife are down in Florida. I've got the whole place to myself. So that does liberate me to be as loud as I want to be. I can yell and scream, although the neighbors probably wouldn't appreciate that. They're visiting the in-laws down in Florida. So it's like, oh, I have a house to myself. And now it's like, I have a house to myself. Where is everybody? Where's Quinn? Why isn't she running in here? But they'll be back in a couple of days. This story is, I can't say, there's nothing that the left does that surprises me anymore. It's sick. It's really a disgusting thing. Headline from CNBC, Elizabeth Warren proposes criminal penalties for spreading voting disinformation online. Voting disinformation online. Democratic presidential candidate Senator Elizabeth Warren on Wednesday released a plan to fight disinformation and to hold tech companies accountable for their actions in light of the 2016 election. I love how everybody just now is like, oh, it's a matter of fact. $10,000 worth of Facebook ads, that turned the election. They think you're stupid. Quote, disinformation and online foreign interference erode our democracy, and Donald Trump has invited both. Anyone who seeks to challenge and defeat Donald Trump in the 2020 election must be fully prepared to take this on. And I've got a plan to do that. Yeah, so did Hitler. Warren proposed to combat disinformation by holding big tech companies like Facebook, Twitter, and Google responsible for spreading misinformation designed to suppress voters from turning out. If there is information, if you're on your Facebook and you're, I can't wait to vote, or I vote every time I'm going to go vote, and then you see something on Facebook posted by anybody, I don't care who it is, or an event or whatever, and you go, well, screw that then, I'm not going to vote. You're an idiot and you are never going to vote, and it's probably better off that you don't vote. I will, this is Senator Warren, I will push for new laws that impose tough civil and criminal penalties for knowingly disseminating this kind of information, which has the explicit purpose of undermining the basic right to vote. How? How does it undermine the basic right to vote? You still have the right to vote. If you say something to somebody that causes them to go, well, screw it, then I'm not going to vote. Are you undermining their right to vote? They're making the choice. If you chain them to the radiator, yeah, you're preventing them from exercising their right to vote. But you writing a Facebook status that, oh, the Democrats are terrible and I wouldn't vote for them. And somebody who only votes for Democrats sees that and goes, well, geez, they make a pretty good point. That's disinformation, though. And I'm not going to vote anyway. I don't care. I read it on Facebook that voting for Democrats is bad, so I'm not going to go and do it. You're going to go to prison for that? Mark Zuckerberg is going to have his door kicked in because you posted something on Facebook? The left doesn't actually, for all of their opining, for all of their preaching about the importance and the reverence they feel for the Constitution and particularly the First Amendment. When they talk about the First Amendment, they really only mean the free speech part, and it only applies to them, and the freedom of the press part, which is absolute and cannot be talked about in any way, shape, or form, except about Fox News, which is evil and needs to be destroyed, and the government needs to regulate that out of business. But other than that, they don't care about the religious liberty. They don't like the redress of grievances. That's lobbying. They don't like that people can gather together because sometimes conservatives get together and march like for things like abortion, march against abortion. They don't care for any of that stuff. They only like the parts of the Constitution that they can that will empower them. That's it. And those parts, they don't apply to you. Freaking hypocrites. But this is unbelievable. Again, this is Elizabeth Warren trying to appeal to Democrats as her campaign flails, which means that there's something in her and her campaign's research that says essentially that fascism appeals to a large swath of Democratic Party primary voters, and they, rather than being repulsed by it, are embracing it. It might be a larger swath than we know, and many of the candidates, all of the candidates really to one degree or another, are embracing it. But it's telling about Democrats that this is who they are, this is what they do, this is the stuff they used to whisper in private and talk about in the smoke-filled rooms, and now they're introducing bill ideas on their campaign websites advocating for it. But remember, it's the Republican Party that has moved so far to away from the center, not the Democrats. The Republicans have moved so far to the right that they need to be imprisoned for being wrong. Maybe you're the fascist? Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. You can email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com, the website, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. All that good stuff. You know how to get in touch with me. Show goes 24/7 on Twitter, and I'm on the radio at WCBM.com every morning from 9 until noon Eastern time, which means I got to get to bed. Have a great... What day is it? It's Thursday. Yeah, it's Thursday. Wow, tomorrow's Friday. Damn, time flies. Here comes the weekend.
Professor Tribe suddenly had a revelation himself. At the time when Clinton was impeached, he said, oh, the law is clear. You cannot charge a president with a crime while he's the sitting president. Now we have a current president. Professor Tribe got woke.